Whoa, dudes, Michelangelo here from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the original one. Yeah, and you are listening to Canned Air Podcast. It happens to be a tribute to comics and pop culture, like yours truly, Cowabunga!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
Boy, do we have a special little episode here for you today. I mean, I'm just beside myself, as any of our listeners might already be aware of it.
But like six of us in here are all besides ourselves.
Right? took me a second, but I got there. It took me a second. But we have an awesome guest today. She did voices in like My Little Pony, the Punky Brewster cartoon, the Glow Friends Christmas movie. You guys remember Glow Friends when we were kids?
Yeah, vaguely, yes.
Yeah, definitely. But she is best known for being April O'Neil in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles original cartoon. We welcome Renee Jacobs to the show, and holy cow, am I excited. So I guess this is going to count as our Thanksgiving episode.
There you go.
I think, what was it, 3 years ago, we had the Shredder on for Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Tora Masamune, Shredder from Michael Bay films. How cool that was. And it was cool because we actually got to nerd out on comics with him, too. Turtle comics.
Yeah, he did.
Remember that?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So another, if you're into this episode, that might be one to follow up with. But you don't want to miss this one because, damn, what a cool conversation this was. But before we get to that, don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. And if you want to support the show, head over to CannedAirPodcast.com where you can click on that Patreon button and become a $5 or more patron. $5 gets you access to the Canned Air Patreon pod, and there are other things that are going to be coming out. More shows that you can get in higher tiers, and merch, people. We're looking at merch that if you're in even a higher tier than 10, you're going to be able to get some, maybe some shirts, some mugs. We're still working out those fine details.
But at the very least, I mean, we've got a pretty hefty back catalog of episodes in there, so you're definitely going to get your money's worth.
Oh, absolutely. So please check that out. And what am I forgetting, gentlemen?
Check Jack and I out every Tuesday on Facebook, Twitch, and YouTube as we play Jackbox and interact with players. Send us a message if you want to be a part of it. Maybe you can win something. So, yeah.
Tuesday-ish, Wednesday sometimes.
Yeah, depends on how we're feeling, what's
just
going on.
Just look at the Facebook. It all can be told on Facebook.
Get on the Facebook and we'll
the Facebook.
You.
Yes. That's how we know we're getting old. But anything else, gentlemen?
No.
All right. Yeah. Let's quit flapping our gums and just get right to our interview with Renee Jacobs. Renee, I want to thank you so much for taking time to join us here on the show. It is quite a pleasure to have you on the show with us.
Thank you. It's great to join you. I'm excited.
April O'Neil, guys.
April O'Neil.
I think you're probably one of my first crushes.
Oh, yes. I've heard that before.
I'm sure you have. What was it about that yellow jumpsuit?
I don't know.
But no, again, it's awesome to have you here. And just very curious about, you know, your initial interest in voiceover. I believe it was in the early 80s, you and your family moved to LA from Lansing, Michigan. And that's when you really start pursuing your voiceover career. So where'd that interest come from? Why did you want to get into that field?
That's funny. You know, actually, I moved to California much earlier in the 60s.
Oh, really?
With my family. Yes. April O'Neil came way further into my career. When I was a child, we lived in Lansing, Michigan, which is home of Michigan State University. Go Spartans. And there were classes that were given for children at Michigan State University at the time. I took a veterinary class. I took classes in archaeology and paleontology. And one of the classes that I took had to do with puppetry. My mother discovered me Saturday morning down in the basement doing voices. She thought somebody was down in the basement with me, but it was me. And I was doing all these different voices and playing to an audience of my stuffed animals on the couch. And she realized I was good, so this class was available. The woman who gave the course was kind of a precursor to Romper Room and Mr. Rogers, and maybe, you know, she was kind of a PBS kind of a Sesame Street kind of a format, and she did a number of vignettes with puppets. So she taught us at the age of 6 years old, 7 years old, how to open up the back of a stuffed animal and take out the stuffing where the mouth was, and then use that as a puppet and come up with voices. So after that class, this woman came up to my mom and said, Renee's really good. And, you know, I teach this in classrooms, and perhaps Renee would come with me and, you know, we'll teach other children how to do that. We do Saturday morning classes. So I did. I was 7 years old. I was teaching other kids how to make puppets and how to do voices and come up with characters. And she had me on the show perform as well. So that was kind of my first entree into, I didn't know it was called voiceover. I just liked doing voices of characters.
I called it having fun. Yeah.
Yeah, I called it not being lonely.
Ever get in any trouble from showing kids how to tear their toys apart?
No, that's funny. No, that's so funny that you say that. No, they came to the class and they were told to bring a stuffed animal that had a mouth that could open and close. You know, if you had a stuffed animal that didn't just have a smile.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How good I am at it.
Yeah. It'd be very hard to do a voice. So that's really how I kind of started. When we moved to California, I got involved in theater, which was my first passion, and did a lot of children's theater. So again, lots of characters and different kinds of plays and with different kinds of characters that I played. So it continued. And then in high school, I had a teacher who actually created puppets and was hired by Knott's Berry Farm, which is a local, you know, like a Disneyland, amusement park. And he did an entire show with puppets in what was then called the Gypsy Camp. And knowing me, he asked me to do the voices. So I did all the voices for those shows. And then I went off to college. I have a degree in opera and vocal performance.
Oh, wow.
Nice. I have a 3.5 octave range. I've sung all over the world. I sing in French, German, Italian, Hebrew, Yiddish, Russian.
Wow.
So I went off into that direction. When I lived in New York, I lived in London. When I came back to California, I got this fabulous agent, and they happened to have a voiceover department. So I was going out for commercials and on camera, and I'm sitting down with the owner of the agency and talking with him. And he said, you know, we're starting a voiceover department. And do you do voiceovers? I said, well, I do voices. So he said, okay, you do voiceovers. So that's how it started. His name was Herb Tannen. And we had a wonderful department. Russi Taylor, you know, of Minnie Mouse fame, was one of the people. There were a lot of very famous voiceover actors with Herb Tannen for quite a while.
Wow.
And that's how I kind of, that was in the early 80s, you know, when I, like 1985, 86, when I started voice overing and in an official way, not in a I can do that.
I see. I see. So when the Turtles then came along, when this idea for this show came along with four upright walking turtles that loved pizza and new ninjas, what was your first impression of this, of these characters of this show?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, first of all, we were all told, okay, you're going to audition for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And we all went, huh?
Exactly.
And the agent just said, just go. Well, most of us had never heard of it before. And there wasn't, oh my God, there wasn't the internet.
Right.
So, you know, there wasn't any way to really go somewhere and research it. Most of us knew the director at the time was Stu Rosen, and he showed us the comic book and he said, hey, I'm going to do this series and I'll call you in, come in for an audition. So that was all I knew about it other than the title. And when I showed up to audition, Stu was there and the producers. And actually, the producers weren't there. It was just Stu and the engineers. And they showed me a line drawing of April. I don't think it was in color. It was just a line, black and white line drawing and a description. You know, she was in her early 20s. She was a reporter. She was feisty and kind of a take charge kind of gal. And so that's what I used, the look and the character description, mm-hmm. and auditioned like probably hundreds of other voiceover actresses at the time auditioned for this part. That's how it came to be.
Now, one thing I had read online was that, you know, you said that Stu Rosen had directed the audition process and that initially he wasn't very thrilled with your performance, but the producers were all like, man, this is April. This is who we need.
Yeah, apparently that's what he told me. You know, Stu was, when you knew him off set or off, you know, mic, mm-hmm. he was a sweet guy. He was really sweet, and I had that relationship with him. But when you got into the booth or in an audition situation, he could be really tough and a little on the snide, nasty side from time to time.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, he was like this little Jekyll and Hyde guy. You know, we all have our insecurities.
Sure.
And Stu was really, you know, he was a real trailblazer. He did a show called Dusty's Treehouse, which was, you know, early children's television. So he was successful as a performer many years before. And you never know what's in somebody's mind. But I showed up to the first recording for the first episode, and we rehearsed it. And then we took a break. And during the break, Stu was a big smoker, so, you know, he'd always have a cigarette. You know, Renee, I didn't want you for this part. Like, oh my God, what the hell?
What a thing to say.
Yeah, nice thing to say. He says, but, you know, I played all the recordings of all the other actresses in town and they didn't like any of them. And then I said, well, I have one more. And I played them your recording and they said, that's April. So you're April. Okay, what do I do with that information?
Fly high on cloud nine for a little bit, because how gratifying that would be to have the producers be like, yes, this, to just hear your voice and be like, this is her.
Yeah, well, you know, you as an actor, you are always very insecure and you always think that somebody's, you know, right next to you over here in line to take your place. So yeah, I didn't think of it the way you thought. I got, you know, like freaked out, but obviously I was good enough. I hung on to the part and they were right. I was April.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Were they ever?
Mm, yes.
And it's awesome listening to you talk because, you know, your normal voice, I can keep hearing April right in there.
Yes.
But obviously it's not spot on. So like what added inflection and method did you add to your own voice to bring April to life?
Well, and you know, you have to, she had a lot of high energy.
Yeah.
So, and she was a little, you know, they wanted me to pitch her a little lower, but I always have a high voice. So I think that the spunkiness and the on the edge of your seat, ready to get the story, that, you know, always ready to take off, was kind of where April lived. So yeah, so she's more heightened, you know.
Absolutely.
Well, it makes sense to be the first reporter.
Yeah.
She was the first human character that I ever played. Until then, I'd always played fairies and dogs and cats and creatures from fantasy, you know, fantastical, you know, flowers and things like that.
Right.
So April was it was interesting that I was able to actually use kind of who I am and what I would probably be like if I were on camera being a reporter.
And it just shows through in so many volumes, that performance on that cartoon, because, and it really set a standard for what April was to become. I mean, up until even today, you know, that's the standard. But boy, I forget where I was going with that. Oh, I remember what I was going to say. You know, April was, I've never been a fan of like the damsel in distress kind of a
Lois
character.
Lane.
Oh, thank you so much, because that's exactly what I was going to bring up. And, you know, Lois Lane being a great example, because she's, you know, a news reporter too. But, you know, Lois always irritated me, especially in like the Superman cartoon, because she was almost arrogant about it. Like, I will put myself in harm's way. And then when she's there, she's very smug. Well, you know who's coming to get me, right? I mean, you're screwed, right? You know? And I just thought, like, when is Superman going to be like, can you just stay home? Like, I've got a lot going on here. Never got that from April. I mean, you know, you did have the villains, you know, apprehend her and kidnap her from time to time, but it was never just like, eek, help. It was her always, you know, one, voicing her mind, two, doing whatever she can to help the Turtles get out of that situation. And she was just a part of the team. You know, she wasn't there to for them to have a reason to fight. She was
get up,
one
give
of
up
them.
And wait. She would be part of the process till the
yeah. She used her medium, you know, to you know, be the eyes and ears up on up top for the Turtles, who, you know, couldn't obviously be up there. And one of the episode clips I was just watching today was, I believe the episode was called April's Fool or something like that, where Bebop and
April
Rocks.
April Fools. April
yes.
Fool.
Bebop and Rocksteady have her over shoulder and they're carrying her away, and she jumps off when the Turtles bust in and does like this swing around and like clocks them in the face, like kicks them like unconscious. And I'm like, this is why this character resonates so well. You know,
I
think so much more than Lois Lane. And I'm just hearing, you know, your construction of that character, it all makes sense. It all fits together very well.
Thank you. Well, that's the that was my intent. A strong woman who she wasn't, like you said, she wasn't there to be rescued.
No.
She got herself, you know, in trouble once in a while, but it was always put me down, you big ape. It wasn't rescue me, and it was always like cut out. You know, I'm here. Leave me alone already.
Yeah,
she was tough. And. And what's interesting is that what we never really realized, and, you know, here you guys are adults gushing over the Turtles. we never really realized when we were recording how much of an impact it would be into the future. I've had a lot of young women come over to me for an autograph at a Comic-Con and tell me that they were bullied. They were the youngest of, you know, they had five brothers, and that April O'Neil really got them out of trouble and gave them strength and gave them courage to pursue whatever their dreams were. A number of the women have been in the military.
Oh, that's cool.
That was their kind of their way out. And all of the guys too, you know, we hear it all the time. If not for the Turtles, I don't know if I'd be alive, or I don't know how I would have survived my childhood. Or, and of course, you know, thank God many people have had wonderful childhoods, and the Turtles are still part of their lives, and they didn't need rescuing. But for those kids, and now adults, Turtles was a lifeline that nobody knew. Nobody had an idea it would be like that. And it's just, it's great. And that, you know, you mentioned Lois Lane, you know, what are the other strong women in, especially in the 80s in cartoons, you know, or pre, you know, everybody was a Strawberry Shortcake or a My Pretty Pony or, you know, Rose Petal Place or any of the other things. April was kind of the first professional, strong woman.
And, queer woman,
it was, how lucky am I?
How lucky are you, and how lucky are we that you voiced that character? Because, it's so funny, you know, like just the other day we were, this is going to kind of go off track, but it conveys my point. The Muppet show that's now on Disney, what's it called? Muppet Now or something?
Yes, yeah.
Kermit's voice is just wrong. That's like, why are you going to do it if you can't get Kermit right?
But, wow, that's weird. There's so many great voiceover actors who can do Kermit. That's right. Strange.
The one they chose, it sounds like he's been smoking a pack of Luckies for the past, you know, every day for the past year. Like, it's really low and stuff. And I'm like, man, if you can't get Kermit. But, you know, that just goes to show that voice. The voice is so important to a character. I guess that's just what I'm getting at here. Another thing I wanted to ask you. There's been so many interpretations of April over the years. You know, Judith Hogue. I'm not sure the name of the actress who portrayed her in the second and third movies, but then we have Megan Fox. We have all the other animated incarnations. And again, they, for the most part, most of them seem to be strong influence on that original character. What have been your interpretations of some of these likenesses?
You know, I'm just pleased that Turtles has continued and in whatever iteration. I thought they've all been terrific, you know. They've all embodied the character. She's been strong. She has, she's stuck to her guns. If not for them continuing the franchise, you know, I don't know if we'd still be as much in demand, although I know fans of the show when they were growing up are just as in love, you know, with Turtles as they always have been.
Sure.
But I'm just pleased that it's continued. And I think all the women have done her right. I don't think that any one of them have embarrassed April.
Embarrassed the character, yeah.
Embarrassed the character. I think they've all done a very nice job. Of course, I'm April and I'll always be April. And
there it is.
The April.
But I don't look like some of them, so...
But you are April. That's the difference. It's you and your personality as well as your voice that is that character. And it, man, again, it just shows through. It became the definitive April because I, you know, looking back at the comics, I feel like she was much more like rough edge. And like, I didn't like April in the original comic. It was, again, when the cartoon came along that this character was, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So the characters in the original comic book were edgy. Mm-hmm. And April was certainly more sexy. And they tried very hard over the years to bring us to this edgy, serious, dark place. And sometimes you'll see at the beginning of certain seasons, the first few episodes are darker and there isn't the smart alecky banter. But very shortly after those first few episodes, we start to be able to start throwing the sand around again. I don't know where it was coming from, but you know, they'd sit us down and say, okay, this year we're going darker. And we'd like look at each other going, you know, isn't there enough darkness in the world? And, right. You know, the guys are so clever and so charming and so loving. It just wouldn't have, I don't think it would have been the Turtles that everybody knows and loves if we'd played it dark like Batman.
Right.
You know, I mean, you had Batman. But Turtles were smart and clever, and they took all of the essence of all the classic comedy actors from Abbott and Costello and the Marx Brothers and Burns and Allen and you name it. These guys took the foundation of comedy and brought it into Turtles so that now you as adults can watch it and you go, oh my gosh, I just got something different out of that line or what they were saying. I just realized that it was multi-layered. It wasn't just kids. It was really for now. And now people are sharing it with their kids. So it's generational. It's incredible.
It is incredible. And man, I'm my own kid. Honestly, I'm just a big kid. I've got so many turtles. Well, maybe I can turn the camera here so you can see all my turtles over here out of shot. I've got them everywhere. They're everywhere. That's just a few of them, though. They've made such an impact on my life, as these guys know. Every time I say Turtles, they have to roll their eyes a little bit because I just talk about it.
No, they're fans. Much, but... They're big fans.
Oh, they definitely are. I just don't know if they're big fans of me after I go on that rant. But
imagine the writing if they actually did go the darker route. I don't think you could use the guys that voiced them to go darker.
Lot of the things that are in those scripts were ad libs from the guys.
Were they?
Yeah. Sense. So, and you know, thank God they let them do it.
Yeah.
You know, and then the writers would also take cues from those characters and bring that in too.
And I think it was some of that improving that even like, wasn't it like helped them break the fourth wall? Sometimes they would address that they were actually in an episode and stuff like that.
So, yes.
That was so cool. Very cool. Kind of ahead of its time, actually, mm-hmm. when you think about it. But there's a few other things I need to ask you about. One of which I heard you say on another interview, which really blew my mind. Growing up in the 80s, I was a huge fan and still have. I've got multiple of him. Teddy Ruxpin's around the house.
Yeah.
And
that's so great.
Where I had Teddy, my sister had Mother Goose. She did. And I heard you say, and I don't remember if you said you were the voice of Mother Goose or just
no.
You were like the voices in the stories.
I did other voices on the Mother Goose.
Yes.
Wasn't she beautiful? She's beautiful.
She's cool. My sister still has her to this day.
Is it still working?
Oh, I can't say about if it's still working or not. I doubt it. But she still has it for sure.
Oh, that's so cool. There was a big market for Teddy Ruxpin and Mother Goose. And then from there, I did a whole series of, there was a stuffed animal and a book and a cassette tape. And it was called The Land of Pleasant Dreams. That was all that era as well. And oh my God, those were the most beautiful toys. Because they moved like, Teddy and Mother Goose moved and it was beautiful. They were beautifully made toys.
Absolutely.
Probably took you back to your childhood a little bit playing with your toys.
I actually now remembering there was a doll called Chatty Cathy.
Oh, I don't know if you know that.
So this was a doll that had a button right here. And it obviously had some kind of recording device. So you would turn the button and you would record something and then turn it off and then turn it the other way. And then she'd repeat what you'd say. Mm-hmm. So I had that toy. My grandfather was a toy liquidator. Okay. So he did lots of things like that, different kind of automotive liquidator. And anyway, he would get all these toys. And Chatty Cathy was one of the toys he was... Then the store would go out of business and he would take the toys and sell them. So I used to have a Beanie and Cecil. I don't know if you remember Beanie and Cecil. You're not old enough.
I know the name.
Hanna-Barbera, Beanie and Cecil. Beanie was a little boy who had a beanie with a propeller on the top and Cecil was a serpent. And they had a string and you would pull the string and it would say, you know, I'm coming, Beanie Boy. and so all of these talking things encouraged me to copy that and to mimic, you know, come up with other ideas.
Sure. That is so cool. It was so awesome to hear that because those toys were such big staples of both my sister and I's growing up. Now, there's another thing I read online, and this is something that I've learned not to trust the internet. And it was it's such a crazy thing out there that I have to ask you about. I read that you are the uncredited voice of Baby Glenn in Bride of Chucky. Is that right?
Yes.
That is so amazing. I am the biggest Child's Play fan. I love all those.
Oh my God, that's so funny. That's so funny. Yeah. I came in and did babies, you know, a baby screaming and crying, and then they mixed it with a pig squeal.
And my God.
And that's Baby Glenn.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to cut in really quick a clip of that audio because I listened to it right before we started this and I thought, how is she doing that without ripping her vocal cords up?
I think maybe that was the pig.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. I did. That was before I knew about the pig. That is cool. I mean, I'm glad it's true because I'm like, man, this is probably one of those things they're going to be like, where did you read that? You know?
Yeah. I think I've only mentioned that in one interview. in all the interviews I've done. So you really looked for esoteric things.
Well, it's April O'Neil. I'm not going to go in half-cocked on this one. But it's just, it's funny, you know, to find that out about Child's Play, you know, The Bride of Chucky, being such a fan of that, to hear about Mother Goose, and then, of course, April O'Neil. It's so incredible how a person's voice can, you know, kind of echo through the halls of your house for years, inspire you, and not even know
every
really
spectrum there is.
Not even know like that the voice coming from April is also the voice coming from the, you know, the other side of the house from that talking goose, and also from that screaming hellspawn coming out of that doll. You know, like you never know. Like it's so cool. I just, the industry is amazing. Did you guys have any?
It is.
I have a 9-year-old son, and he was really into the newer Nickelodeon Turtle series. And we were watching it one day, and April's mom comes on and starts talking. I'm like, that is the original April O'Neil.
That's right. That's right. That was cool.
What was it like?
You know, the guys did some crossovers. You know, they had, you know, our show met their show. And then, of course, Rob Paulsen did Raphael on our show and Donatello on the Nickelodeon show. Mm-hmm. So he got to talk to himself. Well, not really. So, yeah, it was great. I got a call from Nickelodeon. We'd like you to come in. I'm like, hey, yeah. I'm thinking, what's this? So, yeah, I got to play April O'Neil's mom, Mrs. O'Neil. And unfortunately, she was a bot and not real. That would have been cool. Back, you know, I did it for the storyline because they were always looking for her. Yeah. So it was fun. It was really fun. It was a joy to do that.
That was such a good series.
Yes, yeah. It really was. I was really apprehensive at first because I'm such a huge original Turtles fan, and my son was watching. I'm like, yeah, okay. And then, yeah, it redeemed itself very quickly.
Yeah.
So what was interesting about that, so you know that when we recorded, we all recorded together.
Okay.
So we'd sit in the studio with our scripts and microphone. We'd rehearse it, take a break, and then we'd record it. And that's kind of how that banter and those relationships developed. It's exactly how they developed, because they were there next to each other, talking to each other and working those characters out. So the Nickelodeon experience was completely different. Tiny little booth, producers and director on the other side of glass by yourself and just doing line by line. And I went in at least 4 times. The first time was to lay down the original with no animation. Second time were line drawings, and then they wanted changes or said differently. Mm-hmm. Third time was more animation. And then the last time it was done, the animation was wanted, you know, something else for the storyline. Never got to be in the studio with any of the actors. So,
wow.
You know, that changes the dynamic. And maybe because the Turtles were already established, that each of those actors who'd already been exposed to the Ninja Turtles could embody the turtle with their interpretation. But our show, and I don't know if the Turtles would have even continued and lasted had we not been together and developed this family and the relationships between the characters. If we'd just been there by ourselves, I don't know, because the ad-libbing is what really, then the writers would take that, those personalities and run with it. And it was the guys that really did that.
And you're talking about that kind of family atmosphere that developed. I've seen recent like Facebook videos and stuff of all you guys getting together to do like a Christmas like carol and stuff like that. That's just so cool that after all these years, you guys are still, you know, collaborating and hanging out as a family unit.
Because of Comic-Cons and us getting together again as a team, and it's been a real joy to do those. Unfortunately, with COVID, we can't do them right now.
Right.
I know we would have done a new Christmas song. We would have done something new for Thanksgiving. So it's fun. Cam's got this beautiful house and easily set up as a studio. And every one of us, we all sing. You know, we all come from music backgrounds, which is incredible. So it's fun.
That's fun.
And Peter Renaday has a beautiful whistle. Did you hear him on, I think we did Harvest Moon for last, maybe a year ago or longer. We did our first one was Shine on Harvest Moon for Thanksgiving, and okay. Peter did this beautiful whistling. So anyway, check it out.
Have to look for that.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. I saw the Christmas one. I think you guys did last year. Perhaps
we did. I'm Dreaming of a Green Christmas.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I think we've done a few.
Any other questions, Kim?
Nope.
Well, Ray,
no. Jack. No questions from Jack.
No, I've had some comments here and there.
Okay. Yeah. So this is about how it typically goes. I'm not really a mic hog, I promise. That's just my contribution to the show. But no, it's been a pleasure to have you here. I can't tell you what a thrill it is to be talking with April and Neil. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Oh, thank you. I've had a wonderful time. You guys are terrific. And if it's okay with you, I'll close the show.
Oh my right? gosh,
please do.
Please do.
This is April O'Neill with a special report here with Jeremy, Jack, and Randy at Canned Air Podcast. Everyone listen in. This is April O'Neill, Channel 6 News.
That was amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being
on my face tonight.
Thank you for your gift of scholarship. That was very kind.
Absolutely.
And just be safe. And I hope that we'll all be together. What city are you guys in?
We're in Central Ohio, Columbus area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I want to come out and visit. So find me a Comic-Con. We'll come Ooh, out. Well you know? Good.
Yeah, absolutely.
All you have to do is pitch it. Tell them you want the Turtles. You want April. We'll be, as soon as this damn virus thing is over, right, we'll be yeah. here. We'll be there. We'd love, and we could do a live, you know, we can do a podcast with all of us.
That would be amazing.
That would be so freaking fun. Oh my Lord. That would be amazing. We could yeah. Try to read scripts and us do our best turtle interpretation. I'm getting too ahead of myself.
Your turtletation, your turpletation.
There it is.
But Renee, seriously, thank you so much. And if there's anything we can ever do to help you or any of the other cast members out, don't hesitate to ask.
Oh, thank you. Just get us to Ohio to sign photographs.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Okay. We'll be first in line if so.
Yes, we'll do.
All right, guys. All right. Be safe. Happy New Year. Happy Merry Christmas and Thanksgiving. And we'll get through it.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much, Renee.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Be safe.
Bye.
All right, everyone. And there was our interview once again with Renee Jacobs. How much fun was she?
That has got to be like one of my top interviews I've ever been a part of on this show. I mean, she was amazing.
I would have to agree, Randy. I mean, everything about that delivery. I mean, you know, sometimes when you do these kind of shows and you're talking to somebody that, you know, has had influence on your life, you're always afraid that, man, I hope this person is cool.
Someone lives up to your...
Yeah,
your
and hype. Not that I ever feared she wouldn't be, but mm-hmm. holy cow, I mean, not only were expectations met, but beyond. What yeah. an awesome person.
It's kind of fitting that it was a Thanksgiving episode, because she really felt like family there at the end.
Yeah, and Serious, very just yeah. very giving. Yeah. Just very giving. But Renee, I want to thank you once again for being on the show. And Jack, what have we on the website, sir?
Go to CannedAirPodcast.com, where you can see show highlights, guest info, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, become a patron, buy some merch, see some of our YouTube videos, and if you'd like to be a guest and promote your work, send us an email on our contacts page.
There it is, and we're also on Twitter at CannedAirPod and Instagram at Canned_Air. And again, the website Jack was telling you about, access to our Patreon page, to our merch page, everything that you need Canned Air related in one nice package.
That's it.
There you go.
So I think that's going to do it for this week's episode. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving to you guys.
Yes, thank you.
And until next time, I'm Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and be excellent to each other.
I thought you were grounded.
My parents are mean, so I'm running away from home.
Where are you gonna go?
I don't know yet, but that'll show them.
It sure will.
Shipwreck!
Parents just don't understand, and it gets lonely on the road, so be sure to listen to the Canned Air Podcast.
And now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe! This has been a Canned Air production.
Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, I think that was good enough.
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right.
I've never done it. No, right.